This is a Truth for Today recording. Pastor M. Baker is speaking, and this is still October the 6th, 1986. And we got down in Genesis to the 4th chapter, ready for the 6th verse. The setting is that Abel's offering was accepted by fire. Cain's was not. Cain got very angry, and his countenance fell. Changed his visage, his appearance, as anger would do to people today. Except possibly in that time more so, because up to that time Cain hadn't had any need for having disappointment and so on, as far as we know. Verse 6. And the Lord said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth? What hast thou mad about? And why is thy countenance fallen? What's the matter with you, Cain? If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted? And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door. Now, Cain, if you had done well, you'd have been accepted. Your offering had been brought up just like Abel's was. It says, now, Cain, you're getting a second chance. As a sin offering lying at the door. Sin. And that is used quite often for sin offering. It must be a lamb. And unto thee shall be his desire. That is, he'll follow you, Cain. Just go along there and he'll follow you. He'll desire your company. And thou shalt rule over him. In other words, you can pick him up, do anything that you want to with him. He'll be perfectly willing. So there's your chance, Cain. Now, there's an offering. Offer the right thing. Be a man. Do it right. Did Cain? Did he do it? Doesn't say he made any move, whatever, to do it. And it goes on with the story. And Cain talked with Abel, his brother. And it came to pass when they were in the field, that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and slew him. I suppose when they were talking, they must have got in an argument or something. And Cain probably talked mean to Abel because he'd been accepted and he wasn't. Wanted to know of Abel probably, how come he got into such favor? How'd he do that? But Cain had just been told the sin offering laid at the door. An animal. Not his potatoes and corn and so on. And the Lord said unto Cain, verse 9, Where is Abel thy brother? He said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? Oh, he was smart, wasn't he? Talking to God like that. And he said, What hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground. That's a figure. There are things that talk today. The first language is a pictograph language, as far as we can find, no. It's making pictures, and they told a story. And here was blood on the ground and a dead Abel. And the very sight of that blood brought a message to the Lord. The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground. You'll find that figure used in some ways in the rest of the Bible. And now, art thou cursed from the earth, which has opened her mouth to receive thy brother's blood from thy hand. He's not going to be a tiller anymore like he was. When thou tillest the ground, it shall not bring forth green unto thee her strength. Going to be a lot of work for nothing. Now, before that, when Cain tilled the ground, he got a good crop. Everything went just fine. But now, he's going to have to work hard and see a lot of crop failures and all that sort of thing. And every year in the farm papers and so on, we hear about crop failures in different parts of the world. That people have put out crops and cultivated them in vain, and the floods and the droughts and so on, all these things come along, the birds and hail and whatnot, and destroy all their work. And here is the beginning of it. In the case of Cain, the first time we have where man soweth much and reapeth little, or nothing at all, maybe. And a fugitive and a vagabond, instead of a farmer, shalt thou be in the earth. Is this the origin of the gypsies? Oh, not very likely. But you can get a little hint here, can't you? A vagabond, a fugitive. A fugitive, one fleeing from a just punishment. A vagabond wandering about. And Cain said unto the Lord, my punishment is greater than I can bear. Now we have a note here on that which suggests that the true rendering of that should be, is mine iniquity too great to be forgiven? Is there a chance for me to be forgiven, he says. Well, was there? Was Cain forgiven or not? Well, Cain says, behold, thou hast driven me out this day from the face of the earth, and from thy face shall I be hid. And I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond in the earth. And it shall come to pass that everyone that findeth me shall slay me. Now, what's the answer? And the Lord said unto him, therefore, whosoever saith Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. He isn't ready for Cain to die. Well, why? Well, Cain is still a believer. His works didn't change his belief. He did the wrong thing, but it doesn't say it wasn't in faith. See, we have to be careful and distinguish these things. We come to conclusions. And in every instance like this in the Bible, from beginning to end, men are prone to judge from the standpoint of works rather than from the standpoint of faith. That's the reason why nobody has a good word for Judas. Yet he repented. Judas wasn't any worse in one way than Peter. Because the Lord said to Peter, get thee behind me, Satan. Folks, we have to be careful how we judge. Cain got angry, slew his brother. And how many times in your life and in my life have we been angry enough that we could kill somebody? In my own experience, that's one thing I had to put away many years ago. Not to let anything upset me, arouse my anger. And it's not too hard. Especially when you've seen somebody like I did, who put on such an awful show in anger. One of my school teachers. Boy, she get red in the face. And she didn't know what she was saying. And I thought, if that's the way, well, none of it. And I can say this, we've said it before, that my wife, May, and I lived over 62 years together, never saw each other angry. We'd put it away. We're told to put away anger. And it means what it says. But you have to be careful. The thing that makes a man angry is his own self-importance. So take your place. See? It just makes all the difference in the world what your sight is of things, how they affect you. And the Lord set a mark upon Cain, lest any finding him should kill him. He's protecting Cain. Give him a chance to live out a life. Even a vagabond, a fugitive. There's less, yeah, some good works for him to do. We don't know whether he did them or what. Might offset a little bit. His murdering his brother. That'd be an awfully hard thing to offset in any way, atone for, or any word you want to use for it. There wasn't anything that he could do to bring his brother Abel back. And Cain went out from the presence of the Lord. That gives me a chill. Went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod on the east of Eden. The land of Nod. Nod means wandering. I want you to note, he went out east from Eden. The cradle of our civilization as we know it has been from in that part of the country. It's over in here that the great Tower of Babel was built. And after that, men scattered. God said scat, and they went. Well, all he had to do was to fix it so they couldn't understand each other's language. Away they went. And, of course, many of them went west. Beginning of our great civilizations, if you can call them that, in different directions. Going on in verse 17, and Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bare Enoch. Now, this is not the one we have later on. And he builded a city and called the name of the city after the name of his son Enoch. But who built the city? Who's he? Oh. She bare Enoch. Cain knew his wife. She conceived and bare Enoch. And Cain builded the city and called the name of the city after the name of his son Enoch. Now you get it? So the first builder of a city was Cain. Not Nimrod, that comes along a great time later. He built some cities too. But Cain was the first city builder. He began a lot of things. Is there anything wicked in the world in a city? And unto Enoch were born Irad, and Irad begat Mahijah, Mahijah begat Methuselah, almost like Methuselah. Notice, this line is imitating their true line. And Methuselah begat Lamech. There's another Lamech. You have one in the other line too. And Lamech took unto him two wives. A very bold, brave man. The name of one was Ada, and then the name of the other is Zillah. In the old Chinese pictograph language, trouble was pictured as a roof with two women under it. Philosophical, but their language was. Very curious to study the characters of the ancient Chinese. and what they meant. People learned early, didn't they? And Ada, they are Jabal. He was a father of such as dwell in tents, and of such as have cattle. And his brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of all of such as handle the harp and the organ, a musician. Music started way back there, you see, in the time of Adam. And Zillah, she also bare Tubal-Cain, an instructor of every artificer in brass and iron. And the sister of Tubal-Cain was Naamah. Notice here that right in the line of Cain, right in the lifetime of Adam yet, was the Iron Age. And your evolutionists will put the Stone Age first, not realizing that these folks degenerated into folks that lived in caves and used stone. Evolution always gets everything backwards. If there's any change, it's devolution. In the wrong order, wrong way. And we see plenty of that about us yet today. And Zillah, she also bare Tubal-Cain, an instructor of every artificer in brass and iron, and his sister Tubal-Cain was Naamah. And Lamech said unto his wives, Ada and Zillah, hear my voice. Ye wives of Lamech, hearken unto my speech. For I have slain a man to my wounding, and a young man to my hurt. So he has killed somebody. Not in self-defense, evidently, but because he got hurt. His saith, Cain shall be avenged sevenfold. Surely Lamech seven in sevenfold. It says if Cain would commit a murder, do something like that, why, he'd be avenged sevenfold. But he says, me is seven in sevenfold. Now, avenged, what does it mean? Well, now, avenged, we go back up here again, and we find that Cain is told that if anybody did kill him, that there'd be a sevenfold vengeance. And so here, Lamech is saying, well, if anybody killed him, it'd be avenged seven in sevenfold. Seven in sevenfold, excuse me. That's the kind of human reasoning you get, isn't it? And Adam knew his wife again, and she bare a son and called his name Seth. For God said, she hath appointed me another seed instead of Abel, whom Cain slew. Seth means substituted. Seth takes the place of Abel. And to Seth, to him also there was born a son, and he called his name Enos. Then began men to call upon the name of the Lord. Well, I think that's rather poor wording of it. Your note in the Companion Bible says, not began to worship. For Abel worshipped, and others, a long time before. But here he's explaining it by saying that they began to call upon their gods with the name of Jehovah, or began profanely to call upon the name of the Lord, profanely to do it. Well, there's a note also that Enos, the son of Seth, is mentioned here because he followed after the way of Cain. Well, so much for that. We get more of that later. This is the book of the generations of Adam. Now, we've had one book, the generations of the heaven and the earth. Here's the end of another tablet. The generations of Adam tells us who his progenitors were and some of his ancestors. Also tell something about his children. But this is the book of the generations of Adam. In the days that God created man, there's the word created again, bara, In the likeness of God made he him. That's emphasized. Or an image, or a likeness of the image of God. Because we're told that Christ is the express image of God. And men try to make a likeness of that. It's in their imaginations. I went a number of years ago to speak to a little church down here south of us in Indiana, quite a few miles. And on one side of the pulpit, they had a picture of Christ. There he was dark, a brunette, as we would say. On the other side, they had a picture of Christ. And he was blonde and light hair, and so I just wondered which one was Christ, or was either of them. Did they worship one and not the other? Did part of the congregation worship one and the rest of the congregation worship the other? Or just how did they do that? How did they manage it? You know, the whole thing looks silly when you start to reason it. And they're not to make any likeness whatever of deity. And there it was. An outstanding breaking of the commandment from the beginning. And you find it everywhere. And why? Now, I'm going to have to repeat this once in a while. But men cannot and do not like to read the Bible. They cannot because, I say, they don't understand it. They don't take time to study it and see. And so they prefer to pay somebody to read it and study it and tell them what it says. And that fellow may tell them what it says and it may not. They don't know the difference. But it pays him anyhow. It pays to be an expositor of the Bible that way, of course. Always a pay, it paid to be witches and wizards and grand wizards and all that sort of thing, and he's in them. Male and female created he them. And of course, remember that Adam also speaks of mankind. And blessed them and called our name Adam. In the day that they were created, their name Adam, Adama, which maybe has the meaning of red clay, the dust of the earth. And Adam lived 130 years. They got a son in his own likeness, after his own image, and he called his name Seth. Abel is not mentioned here. And the days of Adam, after he had begotten Seth, were 800 years. And he begat sons and daughters. And all the days that Adam lived were 930 years, and he died. Now notice the 800 years in verse 4. This will come up again. And Seth lived 105 years and begot Enos, which we read about before. And Seth lived after he begat Enos 807 years, and he begat sons and daughters. And the days of Seth were 912 years, and he died. Notice every one of these ends up with this little couplet, he died. That wasn't necessary, was it? Enos lived 90 years and begat Canaan. Enos lived after he begat Canaan 815 years, and begat sons and daughters. All the days of Enos were 905 years, and he died. And Canaan lived 70 years and begat Mahalalel. And Canaan lived after he begat Mahalalel 840 years. They got sons and daughters. And all the days of Canaan were 910 years, and he died. Notice, a lot of these folks live up in even the 900 years period, but not quite 1,000. Not a one of them lives a day, 1,000 years. And Mahalalel lived 65 years and begat Jared. Mahalalel lived after he begat Jared 830 years and begat sons and daughters. All the days of Mahalalel were 895 years, and he died. And Jared lived 160 years, and he begat Enoch. And Jared lived after he begat Enoch 800 years, and they got sons and daughters. And all the days of Jared were 962 years, and he died. And Enoch lived 65 years, and begat Methuselah. Now Methuselah was the son of Enoch. And Enoch walked with God after he begat Methuselah 300 years, and begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Enoch were 365 years. And Enoch walked with God, and he died. Oh, wait a minute. And he was not. Made a mistake, didn't they? I do those once in a while. I thought maybe you were falling asleep. He was not. For God took him. That is, he disappeared. Where'd he go to? I don't know. Didn't take him up to heaven where Satan is. Don't think he did that. He was just was not. He wasn't there. God took him. Now, a lot of people will say that he was gone up into heaven, as they say, and so forth. Well, we're in chapter 11 of Hebrews. We'll read there the roster of the overcomers, and it speaks of Enoch and others, Abel and so on. And then it says, and these all died. That answers your question, doesn't it? God took him. Well, he died. That's all. Now we have someplace else where that God took him so that he wouldn't see death. We don't know what death it was that he didn't see, out of his ancestry's father or what, I don't know. But there's something there. It doesn't say that he experienced death, it doesn't say that. There are a lot of things I don't know. I'm telling you some of them. I don't mind that. And Methuselah lived 187 years, had his first child, Lamech. Just think, became a father at 187. And Methuselah lived after he begat Lamech 780 years and 2 years and begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Methuselah were 969 years, and he died. Now that's the oldest one of all. He didn't live quite a day. Just 969 years. Interesting. And Lamech lived 180 and 2 years and begat a son. He called his name Noah. Saying, this same shall comfort us concerning our work and the toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord has cursed. Well, that's a long way of going around to tell what's coming, but you wouldn't get any hint from that about the flood and so on, would you? No. You'll have to read about that before you can see what this really means. And Lamech lived after he begat Noah 595 years and begat sons and daughters. All the days of Lamech were 70 years, and he died. And Noah was 500 years old, and Noah begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth. In other words, here we're beginning to see something of the generations of Noah. Now we're ready for chapter 6. I went through this because it's genealogy and years rather fast. We don't need to spend much time on that. And it came to pass that men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men that they were fair, and that took them wives of all which they chose. Folks, here is something terrible happening. It was terrible when Adam and Eve disobeyed. It was terrible when Cain killed his brother. And here we have Adam and Eve have brothers, and here are women, the daughters of men. And they were fair. Must have been beautiful in those days. And these sons of God, whoever they were, we're told that equals angels in the Note in Your Companion Bible. And I have no doubt but what that's true. And the Lord said, My spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he is also his flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. Now, folks, we'll just go back and look that over a minute. My spirit shall not always strive with Adam, for that he also is flesh. He's like the rest of the folks. He's been indulging in things too, what he said, we're told. And so, God is going to give him 120 years yet. Now, we had the years of his life a while ago. 930. So, when this was said, he was 810. He gets another 120 years, dies at 930. Just stop and think, and read it forward and backward and so on. There were giants in the earth in those days. And after that, after what? After the flood. The sons of God came into the daughters of men, and they were children, bare children to them. The same became mighty men, which are old men of renown. Now here, folks, is where you get a lot of your characters and your mythologies. Now there's an old tradition told way back many years ago that after the flood was these same people, these same giants and so on, because a man and a woman sat on top of the ark and rode out the flood. And they had children and started the fallen race again after the flood. Well, the Bible didn't tell us anything like that. The nearest to that we have is that in the Chinese legend of the flood, they said a man, Nuhua, and his wife rode on a raft and out rode the flood, and they produced the Chinese race. Well, so much for that. In fact, practically every country in the world has its story of the flood. It was universally known. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Ever see folks like that? They just never seem to think of anything good. It's just evil all the time. Gossip, gossip, gossip. Profanity and everything you can think of. And it repented the Lord that he had made man on earth, and it grieved him in his heart. He was sorry he had done it. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, and the creeping things, and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me if I have made them. Now, when he made them back there, we said he saw it was good. But it's turned out something else, hasn't it? But Noah, notice that, found grace in the eyes of the Lord. These are the generations of Noah. Well, we just got through with that. All of these and so on are bringing up to Noah. Jehovah was a just man and perfect in his generations. And Noah walked with God. His genealogy was the perfect line right through from Adam. So he's perfect in his generations. And those generations go right straight through to the Lord Jesus Christ. And end there. Why? Because he never had any children. Oh, but some people are provided for that. And we have one great religious group in this country, the United States of America. They have one whole state. And they say that the Lord married both Martha and Mary, and they had children. I don't know if they say that yet or not, but I know a number of years ago that's what they were teaching. I'm not up to date. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And he walked with God. And Noah begat 3 sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now, which one of these 3 did you come from? Shem, Ham, Japheth. Well, now, the Lord Jesus Christ came from the line of Shem. He was a Semite, Semitic. In general, the black race, colored race, comes from Ham. And the Romans and the Greeks, so on, from Japheth. Now, I just put in generally now, because I'd have to go in a great deal of detail and show where here and there were divisions and so forth in some of these, because these migrated so fast later on. Well, just for instance, here's Japheth. The Galatians that Paul wrote to were the children of Japheth. So were the Greeks. And these people called Galatians especially, there were a special group of them, they migrated west because of the pressure and the great things that they were subjected to, persecutions. And some of them landed in Europe and founded a country called Gaul. There are others that migrated on farther and populated Ireland, Scotland, and a part of France. And these are called Gaelic, again coming from the word Gaul, see, Galatia and so on, Gaelic people. That just gives a little idea of the scattering of the nations, how they went and so on. I'm just going a little ahead here. Now the earth also, verse 11, chapter 6, the earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence, just like it is today. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt. For all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth, falling after their own fleshly desires, going in the depths of evil as far as they could or dared. God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me. For the earth is filled with violence through them. Behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Destroy. All right, Noah, go to it. Make them leave an ark of gopher wood. I'm not too sure where I know what that is, where we got that gopher wood today or not. There are some of the wood that's mentioned in the Bible we know, but here are some wood is before the flood. Of course, the vegetation and so on survived the flood. Make thee an ark of gopher wood. I imagine it's a pretty strong wood. Room shalt thou make in the ark. He didn't say how many. And shall pitch it within and without with pitch. Pitch, kephar. It is something on the order of reconciliation, some of these other things. It was to keep out the waters of judgment. And the little ark that Moses was in was also pitched. Made of reeds and so on, and pitched so it wouldn't leak. The water wouldn't get in. And we find a number of places where that is to be used, and with a significance of protecting from judgment of some kind. And this is a fashion thou shalt make it of. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits. Now, 300 cubits could be 600 feet. It depends on what the cubit happened to be at that particular time. It could be all the way from 18 to 24 inches. At various times it has been. The length of it then will be 300 cubits, the breadth of it 50 cubits, or about 100 feet, and the height of it 30 cubits. And there are shipbuilders today who will say that those dimensions are seaworthy, perfectly correct. Well, it should be. Noah got the orders from God, and God ought to know. A window shalt thou make to the ark, and in a cubit shalt thou finish it above. In other words, then leave an open space just under the eaves of the roof, clear around for ventilation, and that'd be a cubit 18 to 24 inches wide, and that was up where the waters wouldn't be likely to dash in. And the door of the ark shall be set in the side thereof, with lower, second, and third stories shalt thou make it. In other words, three decks. That's a description of the ark. Now, as to what the shape was, whether it was rectangular like a big barge, or whether it had a prow and a stern like boats usually have that kept to disperse the waves as they hit it and split them, we're not told. And so any replicas of the ark that are being made today, and lots of them are being made, are only a guess. We're not told whether the roof is flat, peaked, or what. And as I said, we're not told what the ends are like. We don't know whether the bottom was flat or shaped. Was it like a big barge? Or was it shaped like a ship? We don't know. Nothing to tell us. And behold, I, even I, do bring a flood of waters upon the earth, to destroy all flesh, wherein is the breath of life, from under heaven, and everything that is in the earth shall die. But with thee will I establish my covenant, and thou shalt come into the ark, thou and thy sons, and thy wife and thy sons' wives with thee, making eight souls. And of every living thing of all flesh, two of every sort shalt thou bring into the ark, to keep them alive with thee. They should be male and female. And remember, there's no problem in those days, because not until after the flood and the climate had changed was there any enmity between animals themselves or with animals and men. But after the flood and a new climate came in, there was a terrific change. Of fowls after their kind, the cattle after their kind, of every creeping thing of the earth after his kind, two of every sort shalt come unto thee to keep them alive. And take them unto thee of all food that is eaten, and thou shalt gather it to thee, and it shall be for food for thee and for them. Thus did Noah, according to all that God commanded him, so did he. And that's the end of the sixth chapter. Now, we don't know how long it took Noah to build that ark. There are some who say it took 120 years. Now, you can do some figuring and see for yourself. And a man out there on dry land building a great big ship like that and so on, when the natives around make fun, when they have a lark, making a boat out on the dry land. It didn't rain, hadn't rained and so on, so the water was all down there in the ocean. There were some rivers, but it seems they were all started up in springs, like even the Jordan River starts with it. But the springs, of course, there's runoff too, but only certain times of the year. Well, that's a little picture of that. We'll talk more about that the next time, because I see it, our time here is now up. Dear Father, bless these words to our hearts, that we may learn lessons, that we may learn something of the greatness of men of old who believed and who worked out that belief. And help that we may grow in the knowledge of Christ, that we become faithful in old age as some of these men of old have. And guide and direct all that hear this, that they may be led to read more and to study more of the Word, and to discover the headship of Christ through Christ's leadership.